is carbon. You guys should talk with Mike Sheehan.
I just had a good talk with him.
Fine. Have you got him positioned properly?
I think he is.
Has he talked yet to Baker?
No, he hasn't. He called Sam Irvin and offered to come visit with both he and Baker. And that was done last week. And he thought the timing would be bad to call Baker prior to the joint meeting. So he says, after I have that joint meeting, I'll start working my relationship with Baker.
Well, Baker left with me that he was going to set up a joint meeting on the IC. So Heidi has talked to, he has talked to Irvin, and Irvin said, yes.
Irvin just left it dangling and said, I'll be back in touch with you. I think what disturbs me a little bit about Baker was his move to put his own man in as minority counsel so quickly, without any consultation, as he had promised consultation. And I'm told this man may be a disaster himself, the minority counsel.
Yes. What do you mean, Mr.
Well, he's, well, I can't knock age. He's 30 years of age. He doesn't know a thing about Washington.
Yeah.
So we'll have to watch
Baker. Baker says that he puts the blame on the White House. He says that Carlos has called in and suggested somebody else. That's a great mistake. Of course, I didn't know anything about that.
Well, Baker apparently is quite open in his soliciting. I want to counsel with you all, and I don't want to move until I told you what I'm going to do, and then he did just the reverse. So it was curious, one, that he wanted a meeting with you. Secondly, that he suggested Kleindienst as a conduit.
That's correct.
And there is hope, I think, that he may try to keep an eye on this thing and not let it get into a total circus up there. And Baker might.
Well, that's what he indicated. He indicated, of course, with regard to his situation, his position, though, and with regard to Kleindienst's position, I should have changed up a bit. Really, is the fellow that's going to get hurt most of this. The bus is mentioned. So that they should get hurt too, but I said Mitchell is the real problem is whether or not Mitchell will step on perjury. I said now the perjury is very damn hard to prove, unfortunately. But if you get some people popping off and say, well, I talked to Mitchell. Have you ever talked to Mitchell about this? It never happens.
No.
So he has never talked. Did you go into the Mexican part of the Kleindienst, or did you get
well,
any substance at all?
I've always braced Kleindienst in the past about the potential implications of what this whole investigation the Bureau conducted, what the U.S. Attorney's Office was doing, what the trial meant. This could come back to haunt
Dick
if it gets out of hand. I don't want to get into a lot of specifics.
Yeah.
At this last meeting I just had with him, I said, Dick, I don't think I ought to brief you on everything I know. I don't think that's the way to proceed. But if I see you going down the wrong track, I'm going to have to tell you why.
Good. What did he say?
He said, I agree, that's the way it should stand.
On the executive privilege, when I worked with talking John Irvin a little, and decided that the last paragraph, which should be modified so that it covers what I might have to say if I were asked in a press conference, he'll indicate what it is. But in a nutshell, rather than simply flatly say it, I think that what we should say is that members of the president's staff will not appear before formal sessions of the committees. However, under proper and appropriate circumstances, that informal discussions or so forth can be conducted to obtain information and so forth and so on. I tell you what we're up against. What here is Kleindienst has indicated to me, and we witnessed to you, that he felt that the backup position here should be an executive session of the committee. And I said, well, that's a hell of a difficult thing to put him in. I said, I think that position should be one of, that our position should be one of, assuming that you can't get rid of Robert Norris, which is unlikely, of the two committee cannot have a stone wall. And so it appears that we're not letting them. And so I think we've got to be in a position to do it. Did you discuss this with Kleinmeese as to what the position would be on that point? That's, I think, John, is the important thing that Kleinmeese has got to stand goddamn firm on.
I did. I talked to him about that. I said that, one, there's a statement forthcoming. I don't know the timing on it.
Yeah.
The president will issue. I said that is fortunate the context it's coming out in, because Clark Mollenhoff solicited the statement in a press inquiry. It's coming out in an unrelated context and not related to Watergate per
se.
Right. So that'll be out soon, and that will define what the outer perimeters are. It also gives...
So your plan, you said, is that nobody from White House staff will testify for a committee.
That's right.
Of course, that would help.
Go ahead. Under normal circumstances, if there's a little slide in there. And then what, as a practical matter, I told him would probably happen to be much like the Flanagan situation, where there's an exchange, and the issues become very narrow as to the information that's sought.
Well, you were, if you talked to John earlier, you were revising that last paragraph.
We've done that.
You've already worked with
him.
And, well, after I see his cardinal, maybe give him up. I think we ought to get rid of him in 15, 20 minutes. You might bring it down. You've got it written already.
Yes, sir.
And let me take a look at it again, and we'll approve the statement. I don't want to put it out right now, because it depends on what I decide to do on
it would probably be easier not to have those questions in your press conference per se.
I would prefer, that's what I want to do, is to have this statement come after the press conference to say if they ask anything about it. I've covered that in the statement that will be issued tomorrow. Executive privilege is very complicated. So, see, that's what I have in mind. I'd rather not be questioned on the statement.
Mollenhoff himself will debate you right there on the subject.
Right. So I'll say I'm covering it.
And I did talk to Mollenhoff yesterday at Ron's request.
Wanted to look into the case.
Told him one look in the case, and I had an extended discussion with him on the executive privilege question. Of course, he differs somewhat from where we're coming out, but he agrees that certainly the president has the legal authority to do that, and he agrees also that it's...
well, in his case, what was he talking about?
Well, he says he thinks that all White House staff should be ready to run up to the Hill and testify, and he asks, is what they're doing, and it's the rare exception when the president invokes the privilege. I said, Clark, it's got to be the other way around. Staff can't operate if they're going to be queried on every bit of communication they have with the president.
Right.
Mansfield himself, the president, has recognized that communications between you and your staff are protected. He said this in a policy statement before they issued this resolution up there on having confirmable individuals agree to testify before they are confirmed.
Well, as far as confirmable individuals are concerned, they're all available for testimony, though.
That's right. It's no problem there.
No problem there.
There's not a giveaway by any means on that.
They, of course, will, they can, I guess, we would not normally claim executive privilege for a cabinet officer, would we?
No, sir. Only if, in, say, the rare instances where we have already, where they're going for information, which should be protected, investigated files, classified material for, say, aid programs or something when we did it in the last IRS files. Those are the instances in which we've done it.
Yeah.
And they're quite traditional and should be expected by the Congress when they go after information like that.
I went over to Kleinmeese and said this to show you how the worm turns here, what we went through in the histories there. We were investigating not espionage by a political, one political organization against another, but a charge of espionage against the United States of America, which was a hell of a lot more serious. And in that case, the Department of Justice, the White House, the FBI, totally stonewalled the committee. The FBI would not furnish any information. And here the FBI understands how to furnish information to this committee.
That's
so that ought to be great, right?
That's right.
All right. The Department of Justice refused give us any information at all. And of course, the White House executive privilege. And the press was all on their side of that case. Did you see that one?
That's right.
That was it. That's sure whose ox is being gored. Now here you've got so-called espionage involving a political organization. And so now they want
to... Well, you know, I was doing some checking.
I don't dig this. I said, that's just for my whole that's what our Democratic friends did. We were trying to get information.
Lyndon Johnson was probably the great greatest abuser of the FBI, I'm told by people, by some of the old hands over there.
Used it for everything.
He used it as his personal...
What did he use it against the press?
He used it against the press. He used it against his own party. Back in 64, when the Walter Jenkins thing broke, he had high officials of the FBI out trying to strong-arm a doctor to say that this man had a brain tumor. Walter Jenkins, he also then turned the FBI loose on the Goldwater staff. This sort of thing is starting to seep out.
Is it getting out?
I'm sorry.
Well, you, of course, know the incident of his famous incident of the buggy from our plane.
That's right.
Which they really know is true. And you know these instances that they talk about our buggy and the FBI stuff. So. Believe me, I know exactly what those were.
Before he dropped out officially, he had all the delegates.
Yes.
That's right. which is kind of fantastic.
Sullivan knows it.
Mm-hmm. Sullivan has a wealth of knowledge, and the more I, you know, sort of generally chat with him about these problems, the more it comes out. He's the man that can also document.
Why did Hoover have a fight? It's a hell of a mistake for Hoover to do that. Sullivan knows too much.
That's right.
Why doesn't Sullivan squawk?
I think Sullivan probably is loyal to the
institution.
The institution, and doesn't
somebody
want to.
Somebody over there is not. Can he help you find out who the hell is not? Is it the possibility of the guy at Time Magazine's lawyer? You don't think it's him?
He speculates, and the speculation generally is either Sullivan himself, Mark Felt, who
that's
is.
I know. The lawyer says that.
That's right. And the other one is this fellow, Tom Bishop, who's now departed, who was in charge of their public information. And
well, did he know about these things? Who would tell people about these things?
For example, the 68 thing, I was trying to determine who might know about that.
Yeah.
Hoover apparently told Patrick Coyne, who used to be on the NSC staff.
Is he still living?
I don't know. I don't know the man.
He told Pat Coyne?
He told Pat Coyne. Coyne told Rockefeller. Rockefeller relayed this to Kissinger. This was one channel that might have it in the public domain. The other is when Sullivan took the records, or all the documents in connection with this, out of his office and out of the Bureau. He also instructed the Washington Field Office to destroy all our records, which they did. Hoover, incensed at this, that he couldn't reconstruct, or didn't have the records and couldn't get them from Sullivan, tried to have the Washington Field Office reconstruct them, which they couldn't. As a result of that movement and flailing around by Hoover, a lot of people in the agency were aware of what had happened, and it was on the grapevine.
Well, that's when it happened, then. When Sullivan left, he took the records with him.
He took the records with him.
And that's the only records there were.
That's the only records there
were. He did it out of the fish office over.
No. He was doing it to
protect
the
Bureau.
No, he was doing it to protect the White House and the people over here.
Oh, but for Christ's sake, Hoover.
Well, Hoover never got his hands on the records. If what happened, Sullivan had his pissing match with Hoover, and then he took them with him at that time.
See.
And then he turned them over to Marty, and ultimately.
I see. And so we got.
And then
where is Sullivan?
Sullivan is back at Justice in the Drug Intelligence
Bureau. We owe
We do. He wants to go back to the Bureau and work on. Domestic.
Why is it that Gray is wrong?
I think Mark Felt has poisoned Gray on this issue. And I think once
that
Gray
is. Hell, somebody's doing Mark Felt in. You know, what do you believe the Time Magazine lawyer is Felt Duncan? Is he capable of this sort of thing?
Well, let me tell you where else I heard that from. Was Sandy Smith had told not the lawyer, but somebody else, that Felt was his source,
yeah.
And this came to Henry Peterson. Now, Henry Peterson's an old hand over there, as you know, and bless his soul, he's a valuable man to us.
What did he say?
He said that he wouldn't put it past Felt. But the other thing, I was talking to Quinney about this when I was over there, he said, if Felt is the source, and if we get Felt way out of joint, we are in serious trouble.
Because you know so much.
He knows so much.
What's he know?
I don't know. I didn't ask for specifics. With he said one thing. He could not.
Do you know about the Sullivan stuff?
Yes. He knows about that. I called Felt to ask him what he knew about it, and he was, for example, very cool. When I said, there's a Time Magazine story running, Mark, that in 68 or in 69 or
yeah.
70 and so on and so forth. He said, I said, true or false? And he said, true. I said, how do you know that? I said, I've never heard of that before. He said, well, if you talk to Bill Sullivan, he'll tell you all about it. And he gave me sort of a general, painted a general picture about it. But just cool as a cucumber about it.
And what does he say about denying it? Is he going to stand up for the denial?
He says, John, he said, I said, well, first of all, I don't believe this could happen. I was protecting us as far as doubting what he said. He said, well, John, as far as I'm concerned, our phone call is totally off the record. We never had it. So that's a good one to watch just right there.
In other words, you can't blow the whistle on Felt, just like you can't blow the whistle on the son of a bitch out there, the yeoman, in the Jack Anderson case, right?
That's right. But there will come a day when Gray's comfortably in there, when other things come past.
Like
I think that Gray can, at some point, If this sort of thing continues once he gets through his confirmation, I don't know why he couldn't himself say, I'm going to take a lie detector test, and I'm going to ask everybody in my immediate shop to take one, and then we're going to go out and ask some of the other agents to take them.
As the leakage.
As the leakage. Because this only hurts this whole institution.
Absolutely.